seconds, three minds, three people. This is a production of the Commonwealth Foundation for Public Policy Alternatives. The Box. Inside. Outside. On.
I am your host, John Bowder. I am a policy analyst and communications officer here at Commonwealth Foundation. And I am joined today by Nathan Benefield, our Director of Policy Analysis, Elizabeth Stell, our Senior Policy Analyst, and Dawn Melling, the Director of Community Relations. Now, we thought we'd give you a rundown of what happened during the busy budget season that just ended. And to give you an overview, here is Nathan Benefield. Nate, so the governor signed the budget. Would you call it a win, lose, or draw for taxpayers? And give us some details about what happened.
Yeah, it really represents kind of an incomplete grade for taxpayers. And what's notable is some facts about the budget. It's a $28 billion general fund budget. It's actually spends more than revenue. It's actually spending more than we're supposed to collect next year, about $600 million more than revenue is coming in. Spending down basically the surplus we have in that account. And the total budget of $67 billion, total operating budget, including everything, both of those are all-time highs for spending, all-time highs for spending in education, all-time highs for spending on welfare. When you adjust it for inflation, it's slightly less than the last budget under Governor Rendell, which included federal stimulus money. But what's really noticeable about the budget is what didn't happen so much as what did. We did not see final passage on liquor store privatization. The House had passed a bill back in March. The Senate started talking about that issue. Did not see pension reform accomplished, though that had moved a little bit in both the House and the Senate. Did not see Medicaid expansion, which is a good thing. Lawmakers rejected trying to do Medicaid expansion as part of the budget. And did not see any new transportation funding, taxes, and fees. Which was certainly a priority for the governor to try and get that done with this budget. And a conflict of those things basically did not get done with this budget.
All right. So one of the things that Nate mentioned was Medicaid expansion. Liz, do you think we've finally stopped this in the legislature, or is it going to rear its head again in the fall?
Well, John, that's a good question. And I would summarize it by saying we've won the battle on Medicaid expansion, but not the war. There are many states that are going to be looking at this issue again in the fall, and Pennsylvania could very well be one of them. The Senate has actually expressed support for expanding Medicaid, and so we look for them to push a bill again in the fall. So we need activists and supporters to be just as vigilant in contacting their lawmakers and letting them know how they feel about expansion in the next few months, just as they were very active in the past few months. And we have a long way to go before we can put this bad idea at rest for good.
Liz, where do you expect Medicaid expansion to end up in the fall? Do you think the House is going to take it up, or the Senate, or where should our activists focus their attention?
Well, I would say, first and foremost, focus on the Senate. Senator Vance has already stated that she is going to introduce a bill to expand Medicaid, and so it will start there. And once it moves through that body, if it moves through that body again, as it did during budget season, we will see it go to the House. And in the House, we have a very strong coalition of folks who are opposed to this measure, but they need shoring up as well. So I would say focus on your senator, but don't forget your representatives, because they also need to be shored up and encouraged if this moves past the first chamber.
Thanks. Dawn, liquor privatization was a popular item in the news, and there was a flurry of activity towards the end of the budget season. Can you give us an update on where it stands and who ended up passing a bill and who didn't? And it seems to be confused right now. Can you give us some clarity on that?
Absolutely. This spring, we saw really historic progress as the House passed the liquor store privatization plan that really gave consumers the choice and convenience that they wanted. The Senate then held hearings in the last few months and in the week or two leading up to the budget passing, a proposal was put forward in the Senate. It was voted out of committee. It needed a lot of improvement, but we were encouraged that they were making progress on it. An amendment was passed on that proposal, and that passed a straight party line vote. So the Republican majority carried the amendment to the liquor privatization plan. And that's where it ended, John. It was tied to transportation reform, which wasn't moving in the House. And so we didn't see any further action on liquor store privatization. So it didn't get voted down. Actually, we saw, again, historic progress. There was still more work to be done to make that Senate plan reflect real full privatization. But it's not done yet. Unfortunately, we didn't accomplish this yet. We still need the Senate to pass a plan that reflects what voters across the state want. And what I was encouraged about, though, in the last couple of months is just how many people were taking action on this. Just friends of Commonwealth Foundation alone sent thousands of messages, hundreds, if not thousands, of phone calls, emails, handwritten letters, letters to the editor, Facebook messages, tweets, all in support of liquor store privatization. So that's something that we really need to keep on going with throughout the summer. The legislature may be on recess, but we want to get this done in the fall. It wasn't defeated. We just didn't win yet.
Sure. So who in the Senate or House have been holding this up? Who are some good people for our listeners to contact going into the fall legislative season?
It would be most important to contact your senator and to contact Senate leadership about this issue. That's where the liquor privatization plan rests right now. That's where they need to see momentum in the fall.
Nate, can you tell us about education spending? A lot of Governor Corbett's critics say that he's cut $1 billion in education spending. Can you clarify what the education spending levels are currently?
Yeah, in the current budget, we're giving more than $10 billion from the state to school districts across the state, which is an all-time record high. It's even higher than when we had federal stimulus money as part of the state budget. So we've even surpassed that amount. What happened was when Governor Corbett took office, his first budget, we saw that temporary stimulus money that came from the federal government disappear. And so there was less money going to districts, but it was the federal money that was really disappearing, and state spending actually increased. One thing you have seen, though, that school districts are dealing with is a dramatic rise in pension costs and much, you know, more of the state subsidy for school districts, as well as school districts' own expenses are going to pension costs that are basically paying off liabilities that they've accrued over past decades from not fully funding the pension system and the losses in those pension investments.
Dawn mentioned during the liquor legislative happenings that transportation was linked in some way to passage of liquor. What do we do about transportation? We obviously have some funding issues. What does Commonwealth Foundation recommend in terms of transportation funding?
Well, it's important to note when you're talking about transportation funding that Pennsylvania taxpayers are already contributing about $7 billion every year towards our transportation infrastructure and towards mass transit. We think we need to, before we ask taxpayers to fork over any more or raise fees on drivers, we need to first prioritize how we're spending those dollars and using those dollars. And that includes reforming our prevailing wage laws, which are basically mandating higher wages than the market would bear. We could actually get more bang for the buck and do more road projects, do more bridge projects if we didn't have those expensive mandates. We don't think that we should be redirecting money from, for instance, from the Turnpike Commission, the Turnpike payments to the state, going to mass transit. We're charging drivers to pay for the services they aren't using rather than using driver fees just for roads and bridges, which is really what is designed, that we really want to have a user fee where users are paying for the transportation they use. And we think we need to prioritize look at all state spending and prioritize that. And that includes kind of changing, you know, how we're borrowing money for projects like the Arlen Specter Library and, you know, corporate headquarters, and using the money for that instead of what is a core function of government of fixing our bridges.
So one of the questions, one of the most common questions our listeners and readers ask is, we've got a Republican governor, we've got Republican majorities in the House and the Senate. Why aren't we getting more done? Why aren't these reforms happening as fast as we'd like them to?
Yeah, what we have is not so much we have Republican control nominally, but what we really have is we've called the big government party is in control. And this is special interests who profit off of government and profit off of taxpayers and get their, you know, have the business model based on getting more government, more taxes, more revenue, special favors, privileges. This includes the government unions being a big part of that, what we call crony capitalists, or those corporations that are getting subsidies from the government. It includes the trial lawyers, contractors, a number of other groups whose business model is based on getting, you know, funding, getting privileges from government, and protect the status quo. And they don't want to see things change. They don't want to see liquor stores privatized because they're, you know, profiting off of that. They don't want to see pension reform because they are invested in the current system. And so a lot of the things that aren't happening are because of people who are getting rich off the current system.
Liz, one of the common questions we get on Medicaid is, why don't we want the poor to have health care? I wrote a letter to the editor, and I got a lot of email response asking me that sort of question. Why are we so cold-hearted and uncaring? How do you respond to that?
Well, John, I would say that we want the poor to have health care. We want everyone to have affordable, quality health care. And the problem is Medicaid does not offer that kind of health care. If you look at the outcomes that folks in Medicaid experience, they're worse. They have longer waiting times. They are more likely to die after surgery heart surgeries. They're more likely to have to wait a long time to see a primary care physician, and to get into a specialist, it's very difficult because doctors don't accept Medicaid. So putting more people into this broken system just means giving more people a health insurance card without any guarantee of actual care. So what we want to do is actually get those people care, make sure that they have access to doctors, make sure that they can see the specialist they need to see. And the way to do that is to reform the program, not expand it as is. That's just going to make the appointment waits longer. It's just going to make the situation even worse if we put more people into an already broken system. So I would say we're all about healthcare for the poor because they're not getting the care they need right now.
That's right. And just two more questions before we wrap up. Nate, is it possible that we'll actually see some of these reforms happen in the fall legislative season coming up?
Well, it's not too late. It's legislature is a year-round legislature, even though they're taking a summer vacation. They are active year-round, and so the legislation is sitting where it is in committees or on the floor. We don't have to start all over. We've made a lot of progress on a lot of these key issues. You do lose some of the momentum. There's always momentum to do things by the budget deadline, get things done by June 30th. Historical evidence, the culture of Harrisburg is to do most of the work and most of the legislation actually gets done at the end of June. So a lot of pundits are saying, oh, it's hopeless now. There's no possibility of doing things in the fall. But the other pressure lawmakers have to face will hit them, and that is, you know, the skyrocketing costs of our pension plans and the demand of voters to get things done. And I think constituents talking to their lawmakers, telling them they want to see the pension systems fixed, they want to see liquor stores privatized, will provide the pressure that we need to have to get things done in the fall and throughout the next year.
And Dawn, what can we do? What can activists do? What can people that have been following these issues for months, if not years, how can they propel them across the finish line coming up?
Well, it's tempting to think that since it's summer, since legislators are on recess, not in session, that this is time for activists to take a break. But actually, this is one of the most critical times for activists, for taxpayers, to make their voices heard. This is a wonderful opportunity to reach out to your lawmakers in their district office, to stop by, to send them a note, to ring their office. They're also holding a lot of town halls throughout the summer. Great opportunity, again, to go see them in a small group setting and to voice your concerns, to encourage them to do the right thing come the fall, to let them know your expectations as a taxpayer to see some of these accomplishments that we've been talking about. This is really a great time to talk to them about the impact of pensions on your property taxes. This is a great time to say, thanks for the progress that was made on liquor privatization. Now let's get this done when you go back in the fall. This is a great time to thank the lawmakers that stood strong on Medicaid expansion and encourage them, let them know you are going to be there for them in the fall when the issue comes up again. So I would really encourage activists, even if you've never spoken to your lawmaker before, to send them an email or give them a call over the summer, or two or three calls, and just let them know how you feel about these issues, where you stand, talk to them about how these are going to be impacting your life.
All right, that's all we have for today. Thank you for joining us, and thank you, Dawn, Liz, and Nate. You can find out more at commonwealthfoundation.org, and we hope to see you again.